evening to you, Ace.
It's been quite an eventful week, especially there in the United States on the West Coast, a bit below Brother Gregory there. I've been there myself and seen those houses and, yeah, especially the ones along the beach there in Malibu. I've driven past there and, you know, just the loss of property that I can see from the, you know, from the footage is just... It's quite unbelievable, you know. It's a huge disaster, and I'm really not surprised that more people haven't died. I mean, I'm sure the numbers haven't properly come in yet, but you know, for such a big fire, I would have thought just by looking at it that hundreds of people would have died, and it still could be the fact. But I'm looking at reports that only, you know, less than a dozen, you know, seven or eight or something. But once again, they probably haven't... I'm not even sure if the authorities, so to speak, have gone in there yet to really ascertain what's going on. So, but yeah, just a huge disaster. But anyway, where I'm from, we don't get tornadoes or hurricanes, but we do get big bushfires. So several have passed through just places where I've lived... many, many more people died there that I saw in California here, but recently. Yeah, Rafi, yourself, you actually suggested this topic. Did you want to chime in before we get to Brother Gregory?
Yeah, sure. The reason of this topic is that, you know, just like most of you guys in the room, you know, I start associating Kingdom of God with pretty much everything in life, including this, including the what's happening, the fires and the floods in North Carolina before that. And I always think in the Kingdom of God, if the church was truly the church, how would the situation be handled? What would be different? And it, sometimes I have to admit, it's not always obvious to imagine it. I mean, we can see we're doing it. We started seeing the Kingdom of God. I started recently. You guys have been doing it for a while, but in the grand picture of things, imagining that everybody who called himself Christian in the United States or in the world, what would change? How that would that look like? So that's in the grand picture of things. Sometimes I have difficulty imagining it because we're so far from that. So that's where this topic came to mind. How would these fires be handled if Christians were actually Christians?
Yeah, well, one thing that I've sort of seen, looked into it a little bit. People have looked into it a lot more than I have because there is a few suspicious circumstances surrounding, you know, the fires here. Most notably is the fact that there was no water in the fire hydrants. I mean, they probably started out with some water, but it ran out. And so there's a fundamental systemic problem there in the infrastructure. And from what I can tell, the water was tied up in business deals and things. There was a famous senator, Senator Feinstein, who was lobbied to, you know, change things around in the legislation to favour certain corporations, and those corporations were in control of around about 80%, well, still are, around about 80% of the water in California, and so the state was limited itself the distribution of that water. So, yeah, it's kind of as far as the church goes, if the church was strong in that area, I think at the most, for the most part, the hue and cry of the problem may have helped in the solution, which was to get water to these houses and make sure that, you know, they could have saved a few or saved some lives or something, but Yeah, because there was no human cry, there was only corruption and, you know, people just being apathetic and slothful. They just went along with things and caused this situation down the track. Now, whether there was, whether the fires were, you know, lit deliberately or not, the fact there was no, the fact that there was no water in these hydrants is a huge problem. Now, you know, the fire department, you know, some of us have seen who was running that fire department, a bunch of, you know, lesbians, okay, who cared, seemed to care more about diversity and DEI and activities more than actually fighting fires. I think that's a problem. Once again, the hue and cry of the church may have made people aware of this before it happened. The mayor herself probably belongs to the same group of people, just seemingly selfish people who care more about going away on holidays, you know, and junkets, and, you know, care more about, you know, their pronouns than the job at hand. Once again, there was no church to raise the alarm and say, what's going on? Just a bunch of liberals, by the look of it, who just really, yeah, life's a bit of a game for them in a lot of ways. So that's kind of what I can see. Go ahead.
I watched the interview of a, I think it was a reverend of a certain denomination, Christian denomination, where the church has was completely destroyed by the fires. And this man, the church leader, was asked, what's next? What are you guys going to do? And he said, like, now everybody's asking me, what's next? What shall we do? And the answer he gave, he said that it's time to cry. That we have to take a moment to cry, to cry. That was his solution. That was his answer at the moment. But at the time where this interview was, I think it was from the day one of the fire, that's where the most urgent needs are, because people are homeless. People are desperate and emotionally distressed and physically exhausted. And it's time to cry. That was his solution. This is a church. This is the so-called church. And that's where I said, I was waiting for him to give a word of wisdom and their direction, assistance, and that was his answer.
Well, once again, probably a selfish response, because of course he's crying. He's lost his big sound system and his big, you know, speakers and TV screens and his mega church or whatever it was. I don't know who you're talking about. I'm just assuming. Yeah, so all of those contributions over the years that have gone into his big theatre that he's constructed, all down the drain. He has to start again. Of course he's crying. Anyway, the cry should have been at the start, before all of this happened, the hue and cry of the people to say, hey, what's going on here? California is known for bushfires. It's happened recently already, a few years back. What's the contingency of the water supply here? And, yeah, it just didn't happen because people are just selfish and they just care about image and being liberal. It's kind of like I don't like to say this, but it's almost, could it be a judgment? Could it be a consequence of apathy and sloth? But that's not for me to judge. Gregory, did you have any views on the subject?
Oh, I got lots of views on the subject. I was in those fires before. So, yeah, the problem goes, I mean, all the things that everybody was saying, and I was listening to Rafi, and I don't remember the exact phrase that he says, and this is the reaction of the church, and then he qualified it, something like the so-called church, or something to that effect. And of course, that's the problem, is that Christians aren't really Christians. They think they are. Americans aren't really Americans anymore. They aren't what Americans used to be. People are not critical thinkers. That's one of the things that we have to get back to, critical thinking. critical thinking requires that you have some facts and some information in order to put that information together in a critical way. And one of the things that keeps us from doing that is they give us all kinds of facts that just ain't so. They're not true, and we have nothing to measure them against. When I'm watching all this unfold, somebody was talking, we have to get, maybe when Trump gets in, he'll solve the problem with the post office. The problem with the post office isn't with the post office, it's with the people. The problem with the fire department isn't really with the fire department, it's with the people. And it's kind of, I think, what Mark was alluding to. The problem with government is the people. Because the government, the fire department, the situation in California, the situation in North Carolina, all came out of what the people were doing and not doing. And what they were doing and not doing is they were not being real Christians. There was a fire in Rome, supposedly, according to Tacitus, was started by Nero and a group of the men that he had at his disposal, because they wanted to burn out a huge section of Rome, because he had a model of all kinds of building plans to put there in that place. And they had to get rid of what was there already so they could put something else there in place. And actually, when people were trying to put out the fire, some of these men who appeared to be centurion types, you know, soldier types, and you can spot them. I've told stories before. We recently had some of Connell Rad soldiers come out here surveying an area, and they were going to come incognito and meet with somebody in government. And that person in government said, "So what is with the cowboy hats, you know, and boots?" And they said, "Well, it's kind of a disguise." And he said, "It ain't working, because everybody spotted you guys as ringers from the beginning." And this is kind of the way it was at the time of Tacitus, that these guys who were starting the fires and stopping people from stopping the fires, actually sometimes grabbing people that were trying to put out the fire and throwing them into the fire. And they were able to do this because they were all soldiers. Now, it wasn't all soldiers doing this, but there were people who were willing to serve the less than righteous intent of the men who had gotten up to government, like Nero, and serve whatever he wanted to do, they would do it. And he wanted to burn out a large section of Rome so that he could start his building plans. He already had models of what he was going to build there, because he had this idea of building a great, you know, all these new things and new buildings and all this stuff to remember him, because he was full of vanity. That's why Rome burned. That's why he didn't do anything to stop it from burning, because he didn't want to. I mean, like, why didn't the governor release the water into the main lines? Now, I don't know why the water was not specifically being restored to those fire hydrants. It could have been that there was pumps out and power out, but you have resources, emergency resources, millions and millions of dollars of emergency resources. You would say you don't have water to fight the fire quickly. You know, get these Hercules pumps in and start pumping the water, or open up the floodgates and let the water, because they have the water in reservoirs, and they're dumping millions of gallons of fresh water into the ocean. Like you say, people have already cornered the use of that water, and they've dried up tens of thousands and thousands of acres of farmland in California and run farmers out of business. They did it up here in Klamath. They controlled the water so that the farmers couldn't get water on their crops. 2-3 years, they were bankrupt because they had loans and they couldn't get the water to grow their crops. And then they sold out their property to big mega corporations. They they were usually trusts, but it ended up owned by big corporations. And suddenly the water got turned on again. After all those, and the guys who had proved up those farms over in Klamath in Oregon here, they were all vets. They were promised this farmland after they got out of World War II. And they bought it with farm loans. And they'd been in family farms for 50, 60 years, farming with the same water. And suddenly somebody made a big deal about some little tiny fish, and they shut them off, ran them out of business. Somebody else bought their property, and now the water's on again. So is that what's going on there? Well, could be. Considering some of the areas that are being burned out, some of the areas being burned out are going to be the site of Olympic Games in about a year or two. And maybe they wanted to clear it out. Maybe a lot of these people that houses burned up wanted to sell their houses. The market's down a little bit in some of these real wealthy areas. But if you burn it and you got enough insurance, hey, you got the money. Then you sell the property to the city. They build a big deal there for the Olympics. And you're off somewhere having a vacation somewhere with millions and millions of dollars. Could that be what's happening? Well, you require investigators to find out. Nobody wants to.
I did hear that from Abraham, and I did hear it out on X too, that, yeah, the biggest insurance company, I think it's called Farm something, they took the fire off the insurance and basically shut that part down.
Well, they did that with some areas, absolutely. But everybody in those areas are not in on the fix. Everybody in Rome wasn't in on the plan to burn Rome. But the guys who were, they made sure all their valuable stuff wasn't in the area at the time, because they were in with the in crowd. You know, and, Nero supposedly fiddled while Rome burned. And the mayor of one of these big areas was in, well, I wasn't even in town. I was over in Africa. Meanwhile, the governor's walking around saying that he's on the phone talking to the president. And then the lady says, well, put it on speakerphone. I want to hear his voice because I don't believe you. Well, he says, well, I actually can't get reception here right now. That's why I'm walking around to find reception. What he was doing is walking around with a phone up to his head so nobody came up and talked to him or bothered him. And then he could claim that he was talking, trying to get things solved. He's not getting water in the pipelines. He's not doing it. But there's all that corruption. But that, even if we find and uncover that corruption, if it's real, and I can't say it's real from way over here, I know people in government, and I know there's corruption in government. And we got all kinds of people under indictment or being threatened with indictment in Oregon because of criminal activities. People I know, the governor herself. But will it ever, anybody ever go to jail? Will we actually root out the swamp monsters? Chances are we're not. But I think the problem, the swamp monsters that we see, the graft, the corruption, they just, there's a bunch of commissioners in over in Klamath that got into trouble, misappropriation of funds. I could tell you about a lot more, but some of it's still under investigation. But the reality is the corruption is pervasive in all these areas, and probably there are conspiracies. You might be able to uncover some of them, and maybe the shock value will wake somebody up. But none of it is really getting to the root problem. And the root problem stems back 50 years, 70 years, 100 years, where Americans accepted a lie and went under strong delusion. And now they sit in darkness. And like Rafi says, they're crying out. It sounded like that guy was just crying. But, you know, it talks in the Bible about crying out. in that day when everything is going to pieces and there's corruption everywhere and they're taking and taking and taking and making your sons and daughters run before their chariots and making their daughter their servants and maybe even trafficking their children, all that going on, and people cry out. The Bible says God will not hear you in that day. Why? Because we made that wrong turn. So we want to really fix the problem, and I don't think it's exclusive to LA. Certainly not exclusive to the United States. It's pervasive all over the world. You know, the Bible talks about, they use a number of words like, you hear them talking about dearth. In the early church, there was a dearth going across kind of central Roman Empire. Well, what's a dearth? You know, if you're reading in the King James, you see the word dearth. And you can ask, what's a dearth? And of course, that word is limos in the Greek, but limos is also translated famine more than it's translated dearth. It's also translated hunger. It's also found with other words like pestilence, which can mean plague. And sometimes with the word tarake, which means to trouble. And of course, we had our riots. Nobody could seem to solve the riots. You know, the people were just in the streets, setting fire to buildings, tipping over cars. Nobody called out the National Guard. You think the National Guard would have put an end to that right away? Certainly could have. I've seen it in L.A. when they pulled out the National Guards and the riots in Watts stopped overnight. I was there at the time of the riots. But, I don't even think it would have got to riots if all the people who say they are Christians were really Christians. So, you know, I use the example that we find in the Bible in the Acts of the Apostles. That's something that we're going to probably go through here. I don't know if I'm going to do Luke first or then Acts, or Acts first, or do them both simultaneously. They're both written supposedly by the same guy as a two-volume set to kind of complete the gospel so that you can understand the gospel. We've already gone through Matthew, Mark, and John. But Luke is the longest of all those Gospels, and it's coupled with another volume that we call Acts. And I know all kinds of people that are reading it, but they don't actually know what's going on. There was government aid coming to those areas where there was a dearth in central Roman Empire there, where there were these food shortages that also led to disease eventually. In some cases. But the Christians didn't say, you know, that they were going to lobby the government to get aid to these areas quicker. They went themselves. They showed up themselves. They brought grain themselves, food themselves, supplies themselves, distributed it themselves. And they did well. And it caused jealousy amongst the Romans and other people that were a part of the Roman system. This is the one thing. They took history out of school back, I was trying to think of the year that was. It's probably the 70s and 80s. I remember talking to somebody who worked at the public school here, and they were all happy that they were taking history out of the school. Because why do we care what Romans and Greeks did? How is that going to help us? Well, if you don't learn from history, of course, you're condemned to repeat it. And what did they use to gain power in Rome? The government, to gain power. How did they go from a republic to an indirect democracy to a totalitarian dictatorship? Well, they had to weaken the people. They had to cause the character of the people to degenerate. And they had to do it in a way that the people didn't even notice that they were degenerating as a society. And of course, one way is to get the people distracted by free games, free bread. But in America, we were already depending on public education to teach our children. Now you get all kinds of people up in arms that they're corrupting our children with those books they have. They've been doing that for 40 years. They're just getting excited now because drag queens show up. It gets so obvious. But they still want to send their kids to public school. They just don't want the drag queens there. They don't realize their kids aren't learning history. How did they get to power? They controlled the wheat. They controlled the water. There was riots mentioned at the time of Jesus Christ, which is about the water coming into the city and how to get water into the city. And there was riots caused by the way in which they chose to do it. And we've explained that. But people don't know history. Kids don't have a work ethic. You know, back when, you know, my father-in-law was growing up, and his father, kids were working when they were 14. They might still go to school, but during the summers, they got jobs and they were working. They've made laws that kids can't work now. They go to school, and they have birthday days. If there's somebody with a birthday in that class, everybody's going to have a party. I just was talking to somebody, homeschooler, but they were talking. People always ask the homeschoolers, you know, what are you learning? You know, what grade are you in? And the kids don't know grade. But I told them about, you know, I have a collection of school books, fourth grade, fifth grade school books, where the fifth graders have to calculate the amount of sand, gravel, and Portland cement used to pour a sidewalk in fifth grade. Kids are graduating from high school today. That was a 1945 school book used here in America. Kids are graduating today in high school, and they can't figure that. They don't know how to do that. So there's the problem goes way back, and it goes back when people began to develop an appetite for benefits and the habit of receiving them by the rule of force and violence. In other words, by forced taxation. I've said before on this, on our program, we have the largest rural fire department on the West Coast in this county. It was started by my son and a neighbor. It has put out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of fires, including brush fires, which we get here. We had a fire like they had come right down, engulfed all around the houses. We didn't lose a house. We lost one garage made out of wood, about 80 years old. I mean, it was made out of old gray wood. It was board and bat. We didn't lose any houses. The government was telling us to stop fighting the fire and get back. They actually tried to get the cops to arrest us. We still put out the fires. We saved all the homes. I mean, the flames were so close to these houses, it was breaking their windows because of the heat. But the house didn't catch on fire. Of course, this is a valley full of working men, and we hadn't even started the fire department then. It was just neighbors showing up with their own equipment. We'd had another fire about 8 years before, started, you know, got away from the Forest Service and started burning all the way down along the rim of the mountains here, threatening the homes. Local rancher, who was also a logger, went and sent away for a bulldozer at his logging outfit, had him bring it up on a low boy, drove it off the low boy, and this headed up the mountain, and he stopped that fire. Not only saved houses, but saved graze from being burned up. But it's because in this valley, people were still taking responsibility. I mean, they got a little worked up when I started homeschooling my kids 50 years ago, but now the number of homeschoolers are way up. But taking back your responsibilities, learning to put out fires in your community, learning what to do so that your community doesn't burn up. Like I said, I've been in those LA fires, lived up there right along the foothills. Our, the subdivision that my folks moved into had that same kind of brush right upside the hill across the street. And but we didn't lose any houses when it came down, although I seen a guy engulfed in flames running across his rooftop and leaping off his roof. He didn't get hurt bad or anything, but people were stopping the fires themselves, and then they did things so that the fire didn't take over. But I can take you up to the wealthiest areas near Bend here, like Sun River. That place is going to burn up. Every one of those houses are going to go up in flames. The fire department's going to burn up. The fire department in Lapine has wood shingle siding. That's actually the truth. The fire department, surrounded by trees. If you get a crowning out fire go through there, the first thing you're going to lose is the fire department. But people don't have any common sense. They don't have any critical thinking. Why? Because somebody else has been teaching their children. Somebody else has been fighting their fires. Somebody else has been arresting their criminals. Somebody else has been running their schools and their health care and their welfare. And all their government services come from men who exercise authority one over the other. And they're ill-equipped to take care of these problems. They don't know how to take care of these problems.
Oh, I think weakening the poor happens on all levels, not just at the basic poverty line.
Well, it pushes back the poverty line to be more inclusive of more people. It expands the poor because we're poor in our thinking. People are still thinking. The people that are for Trump, they still think they got a guy in there and his team, and they're going to fix the problem. But the problem, again, is what I said at the beginning, is the people. You can only fix the problems that we're seeing. I mean, they're even if you got water in the pipeline, somewhere that water enters into the fire hydrant pipes that are all over those areas. And you open them up, they lost pressure really quick, and then they didn't have any water in it. The same thing happened in Hawaii. But they actually eventually found the guy who turned off the water so that they didn't have any water in their fire hydrants. They didn't even have water in their houses. That guy that was engulfed in flames, I mean, I was just 100 feet away from him when he was engulfed in the flames, came off the side of the hill, went all the way across the road, went all the way over his roof, and he just was suddenly in the flames. He was up there with a garden hose. The garden hose still worked. But in Hawaii, they shut off the waters to the houses, so the garden hoses didn't even work. They couldn't even wet down their roofs. They couldn't stop it. Who shut that water off? Somewhere, they decreased the amount of water in that those pipes. They weren't restoring it. Somebody shut a valve. Because, you know, that naturally, that water should fill up. And I know most of that water in those areas is gravity feed. I lived there for years. And so while you may have to pump up, in San Francisco, a lot of times they have to pump up into reservoirs that are on the tops of mountains. There in California, they already got the reservoirs higher, and they've brought the pipes in. Somebody shut off those valves.
Yeah, when I heard Trump talk about it, there's a big reservoir, I think it's called Kern Reservoir, Kern County Reservoir, something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
He's basically blaming Gavin Newsom for turning off the faucet there. It's literally like a big faucet, and you know, the valves, the you know, size of a house kind of thing. And he reckons you can turn it off and on. And he's Gavin Newsom is the guy that turned it off.
Now you might lose pressure, and you know, if you had enough firefighters pulling water from enough hydrants. Although those pipes are big. I know what those pipes hold. I was there during the earthquakes. I've seen the pipes. I've seen the guys excavating them. And if you got enough fire departments pulling from them, you will lose pressure. But you won't lose water, because the water is going to keep coming and filling the void. Unless somebody farther up the line shut off the water. Now, during the earthquake, sometimes that water got shut off because the lines broke because of the earthquake faults. But that's not what's happening. So, but again, the problem is the fact that, you know, that was one of the things. We would fight the fires ourselves in this valley. Because we had a long tradition of doing that. Because there aren't any government services out here. We didn't depend on them. We depended upon our neighbors. And everybody's got backhoes and cats and equipment and know how to use them. And but they would shut us down. Forest Service would shut us down. They would try to sick the police on us. Now, we had lots of victories and the police backed off, but we couldn't drive onto Forest Service land. We had enough equipment to put out one of the fires that came through here, burned right up to the church property. It stopped right at the church property. No firemen stopped it. It just stopped. But actually, it creeped over a little bit, but it did good where it creeped over. It burned up some brush that we didn't need anyway. But the reality is what they did, they realized we have to be smarter than the government. So they went out and created the, I was trying to remember the full name of it, RFPA. There's a couple more initials in there. Completely nonprofit. Completely funded by the people. And then they got people to come in and train locals and then give them certified training. So they're now firemen, certified. A couple of big businesses actually paid the expense of, we had to get liability insurance. But we got it. But I mean, we have put out more fires. I can't even count them. 1 year alone, I know we put out 109 fires. And the season wasn't even over. And it's all locals doing it. But you're probably, you go up and try to put out your fire or stop this fire or cut the brush across the road that's going to be the source of burning up your house. They won't even let you do it, but I'll guarantee you most of those people aren't even thinking about doing it because they figure the government will save them and protect them. But the government's not going to save them or protect them.
Yeah, that seems to be the basic factor.
Why isn't the government going to save them or protect them? Because you've created a government that is filled with offices of power. And, you know, they have control. And the DEI, is that what they call it? Department of Equity and whatever. That's all about power. Homosexuality is really all about power. That's why they have to have groomers. Is because they're setting people up in order to have power over other people. But so all these symptoms that we saw in Sodom and Gomorrah and everything, the homosexuality, the corruption in government, it's all because the apathy of the people. The reason everybody's under tribute in every single country in the world today, tribute, what's that? It's where your labor belongs to the government. Yeah, a portion of it. You know, the bondage of Egypt, 20% of your labor belonged to your government. Canada, income tax starts at about 60%. 60% income tax. United States, it starts at, you know, maybe 20%, something like that. Some people pay as low as 10% with funds that come back. I know at the lowest wage in Sweden, a minimum, at the lowest wage, 30% of what you earn is going to go to the government. This is automatically going to come out. France, 70% is their tax rate. The average tax rate is around 70%. The bondage of Egypt was only 20%. But nobody wants to admit they've returned to the bondage of Egypt. That's how dark their eyes have gotten. They don't want to see. They want to think it's the government's fault. It's Newsom's fault. Now, I fully agree that he may have done something to keep the water from going in there. There may be graft and corruption and all this. I mean, the people in North Carolina were just reminded by their county government that they're still going to owe the taxes on their property after the flood. Some of them, their property isn't even there. There's a river where their property used to be. Their houses aren't even there, but they're still going to owe the tax. Nobody said, well, let's have a moratorium so that until we reassess, find out who lost their homes, etc., because you can't tax a home that's not there. But they don't even want to bother with that. They just reminded them, you're still going to owe the tax in North Carolina, and they're one of the less forgiving states. You could lose your property really quick. I don't know. Now, you could create conspiracies that it's going to end up being, their property's going to end up being part of a strip mine, or there's going to be a strip mine that comes in and buys out all their property because whatever, what is it, lithium they found underneath that area. And, of course, that may be true. But that's, knowing that that's true is not going to solve the problem. Problem is that people have to take their responsibilities back, and that's the message of Christ. You had to take care of one another. You had to love one another. You had to stop coveting your neighbor's goods. You had to stop backbiting and hating one another. You had to forgive everybody. But that love, that's a responsibility. You had to take care of all the needy of society through charity. In order to do that, they had to sit down the tens, hundreds, and thousands, which Christ commanded his disciples make the people do. But what church preaches that today? What church even tells you? You know, in the actual Greek text, he repeats it in rank upon rank of tens. You know, he repeats the word several times. And of course, he didn't have to say it 100 times, because all the synagogues of Judea and all the synagogues all over the Roman Empire that were connected to the Temple of Herod were already organized into 10 families. 10 heads of families came together. Those heads of families were elders, and they formed a congregation, and they took care of all the welfare needs of their society. But they were networked together because sometimes you have a fire in one area and everybody's homes burn. They need help from another area. Or there's a flood. Or there's an earthquake. Or there's an invasion. Or there's a riot. And you need people from other areas. You may even have to evacuate your area like they did when Jerusalem fell. Christians had to evacuate Jerusalem. And they got free passage from Titus. They came out singing and had a place to go because they were a network of tens, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands all over the Roman Empire. And that network was bound together by social bonds created because they wouldn't go get the welfare at the government temples. Paul told them, David told them, all the prophets told them, welfare at the hands of men that exercise authority one over the other is a snare and a trap. It will not only make you human resources, it will curse your children with debt. But that's contrary to what you're hearing in that church where that minister was crying. Because Hayes, you know, I don't know the particular guy, but odds are he's one of the daughters of the harlot who rides the beast, doesn't take care of the needy themselves. Oh, a little token needy here and there. But he depends on men who exercise authority one over the other to take care of the needy of his church. He depends on, you know, the welfare system of Gavin Newsom and Barack Obama and FDR. We've been doing this for hundreds of years. This is why our eyes are darkened. And to point out that there's corruption in the government, fine. But don't be distracted by the corruption in the government. There's a lot of talk. I'm just going to brief this off topic a little bit. I'll just show you. It's not really off topic. you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the Middle East right now between Iran, Iraq, Israel, and the Gaza Strip. Gaza's problems are almost 100% related to the fact that they have been an extreme welfare state for the last 20 to 30 years. Since Gaza became its independent enclave, it was a welfare state. And it weakened the people so that people like the Hamas people could take over. And of course, a clever guy, you know, an insidiously clever guy, would like to see them backbiting one another because they know they'll never become strong. Because they're divided. Which is why we see Paul talking about it, and the Bible talks about it, about these people creating division. The plan of Christ, of people sitting down in a network of tens, hundreds, and thousands, taking care of one another totally through charity, like John the Baptist said, like Jesus said, like Paul said, creates social bonds that unite the people that are not easily broken. And then if those people care about others, including their neighbors, I just heard Woods, actor, I was trying to think of his full name, I can't think of it right now, but very staunch conservative guy, lives in that same area. I don't know if his house burned up, but he heard from somebody who knew he lived down the road, somebody got a hold of him, and said, my dad is there in the house. And I can't get there to get him out. And I can't get a hold of him. And so he went. The actor, Woods, I mean, he's like 70. He's probably the one of the smartest guys in Hollywood, which is not necessarily a compliment, but I think he has like 169 IQ. Very outspoken conservative. He decides to go there, and he says, well, they said they've already checked. The firemen have already checked. He says there's a little room, the guy, because he's talking to the son, who's miles and miles away, can't get there. And he says, there's a little room my dad likes to go into and sit. And it's not easily visible. It looks like a closet. And he goes there to that little room, and there's the father sitting in there. And he got him out. It was within minutes of the house burning to the ground. I don't know, it might have been a half an hour or something, but the house burned to the ground. It would have been gone. You talk about how many people are dead. They don't know. They won't know. There's probably four times as many people dead in North Carolina than the official toll. They're not going to find the bodies. They'll never find the bodies. Some of them are under 20, 30 feet of mud. They're just not going to find them. But so I don't have any idea how many people are dying there, but we have to be careful that the people that are there and contributing to the problem, making the problem different, that is not, finding them is not going to solve the problem. It's like electing Trump. You're going to think he's going to go in and drain all the swamp monsters. You already see the media. You just saw it on Facebook.
Zuckerberg.
Yeah, he's just, now all of a sudden, we're going to have free speech like Twitter. And we're getting rid of all the fact checkers. And you say, oh, that is, now he may be turning around in his heart. I don't know. But I wouldn't count on it. He's turning around because he's losing money. Everybody's moving away from him. You know, there's a lot of people that aren't, but he's the lukewarm. You know, the lukewarm, they see everybody going and following Trump, and more power to Trump. I'm fine with Trump. I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote against him because I know the solution is elsewhere. I'm focusing on the solution. Well, the solution is actually conforming to Christ, not conforming to modern Christianity. They're the ones who delivered you back into bondage. They were all in power when they got all of you to give up a portion of your labor to get welfare from the state, welfare that should have been provided by the church through free will offerings, through charity. But they removed that element from the equation of the Christian life. And they said, oh, you can get your welfare from men who exercise authority. And you who listen regularly know that Christ said, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it's not to be that way with you. Because it darkens your eyes. We're going to talk about this tomorrow. Talk about the government of Christ. You know, people say Jesus wasn't political. I'm going to show to you tomorrow, Jesus was political. You're trying to fix an old wineskin that's full of corruption. You know, and I'm not saying that people can't try to do something about the corruption they see right there, but don't lose sight that the solution is taking back your responsibilities, learning what it means to care about your neighbor. That in order to care about your neighbor, even your jerky neighbor, you have to forgive him. And you have to sacrifice. You have to choose to sacrifice. That's going to change you, just as when you developed an appetite for a benefit and the habit of receiving them at the expense of others and depending for your livelihood on the property of others, you instituted rules of force. We're going to force you to pay for my child's education. We're going to force you to pay for my fire. The early fire departments in America, started by Benjamin Franklin, were all volunteer fire departments. There was money that was funding it, but it was all charity that were funding those fire departments. And almost all the firemen were just the guy in the store down the street. When they rang the bell, everybody came. They bought some equipment, but they would have bazaars and festivals and donations and buy the equipment. And they were amazing firemen sometimes, even all the way up into the Civil War. The first military outfit that went south, not to attack the Southerners, but to get their, you know, the merchants paid for the First Army to go to the South to go and collect the money that the South owed them, because the South was trying to pay their bills with paper money printed in the South. And they said, we don't want that. We want real money. Because everybody knew back then that paper money is cashless. That's not real money. Paper money isn't real money. What the South did was they said that they confiscated federal gold that was in banks that were in the South, which was illegal. They didn't have any right to do that. That's federal gold. They could have started their own accounts. But then they issued paper money, which was federal script. They had a couple of nicknames for it, but you know, it had the flag of the Confederacy, Confederate dollars.
I thought that was called the Continental or something, where there was even a saying, you know.
Well, during the American Revolution, some banks did issue Continental dollars on the say-so of Congress, and Congress was going to have to pay those back. But that was the American Revolution. Most people didn't like those, and of course, eventually, they lost all value and wasn't worth the Continental dollar. But this is now at the Civil War. And of course, there was no U.S. bank when the Civil War started. They tried to create one back with guys like Andrew Jackson, but he opposed it. But banks did issue notes on those individual banks. There was no Federal Reserve, but there's always been paper notes, and they were usually issued by a given bank. And this went on in London, it went on all over the world. But most people, if you tried to pay a debt with a note, a lot of people throughout history would say, no, we accept cash only. And notes were not considered cash. They were a promise to pay cash. Cash was gold, silver, copper coins, occasionally a few other precious metal coins. But those were the basic ones. But the Confederacy printed up notes, And then they started circulating it because gold was in short supply in the Confederacy. So when they bought things from
The Yankees wouldn't accept it.
Yeah, the northern merchants, you know, they would ship stuff to the south because they're manufacturing up in the north. They would ship stuff to the south, whether it was plows or equipment. All the steel mills were up in the north. They would pay for it with Confederate dollars, and they said, we won't accept this. We only accept cash. And they said, well, we can't, we don't have cash to give you. We only have these notes. And they said, well, we know you have gold in your banks. We're going to come down and get it. And so they literally created the first army from the north to go into the south to collect the debt. I mean, they were bringing the paperwork. And they would sign the papers in the bank, that's the idea, and then they would take the gold and load it up in their wagons, and they'd come back with a whole army protecting them so nobody robbed them. But they had to pay those armies to go down with the largest, probably one of the most famous, largest groups of military soldiers going down. It was the militia. They were firemen. And they talk about the parade going down to the south. They're just going to Virginia. They're going to go to a Virginia bank and collect the gold that's owned the northern merchants. And it was quite a bit. They had no U.S. military soldiers with them at all. But Lincoln said, and nobody knows this history. I got Carl Sanders' whole history book. Details this out, but nobody reads that anymore. They go to school. They already taken history out of your school. They did that 20, 30, 40 years ago. The parents who are sending their kids to the school now, they don't know history. But anyway, they're marching down there, perfectly legal. Nobody's complaining that they're doing this. But Lincoln said, we ought to send at least one federal officer with them to represent the American government. And so they did. They sent one officer and his aide to go down there. And they went down there. They were in Virginia, and somebody had put a Confederate flag up on the top of a hotel there. And a group of guys were going to go up and take that Confederate flag down and put a U.S. flag up there. And the army officer that came with them, went with them up the stairways, and in the stairwell, the owner of the hotel stepped out and fired his shotgun at the guys coming up his stairwell in this four-story hotel, and the only guy who died was the federal officer. And then somebody pulled a sword and stabbed the hotel owner, and that was the end of that first incident of the Civil War. But they were only going down there to get real money to pay real debt, which they had every right to do. And they ended up collecting the money and going back with it. But most of the soldiers that went down there were firemen. They were voluntary firemen. And I don't want to take anything away from our modern firemen. A lot of them are very dedicated, very efficient guys, hardworking. They have ridiculous pensions, in my opinion. Of course, I'm sure they'll argue that, but I don't really think that's the problem. The firemen that we have in this largest fire department on the West Coast, they're all volunteers. Nobody gets a wage. Top guys don't get a wage. Nobody collects money. Everybody... But when there's, now we're not supposed to put out structural fires, but occasionally we might accidentally put them out in order to save rangeland, because we couldn't get the permit to be. We do have a volunteer fire department in a town like Paisley, but they got the insurance as rangeland. Well, everything out here is range. There's 20 miles between houses sometimes. But if a house catches on fire, we want to put it out so it doesn't catch the sagebrush on fire. So we're not fighting structure fires.
Accident.
technically, we're protecting the sagebrush. But those are what you have to do, and nobody's complaining. But the key thing here is that Christ had the solution. The Teutons understood it. The Celts understood it, but we've lost sight of it. Nobody's teaching this history anymore. But the fact is what happens, and you know, those of you who listen regularly know that I've been quoting people like Plutarch and Polybius, who are historians, saying that your society will degenerate if you develop an appetite for benefits at the expense of your neighbor. And in 1920s, FDR said, no, that's okay, and the churches didn't say hardly a word. And you can go back before that, you can go back to around 1890, 1910, where they were, public schools were no longer being financed by private donations, but by taxation. That was a change in America. If you want to fix the problem, you got to do what a lot of people are starting to do. Got to homeschool your kids. You can get together with groups to help you do that. Network groups that help you do that. My daughter was just sharing with a homeschool outfit some of the books that we've accumulated along with the teacher's editions. They're old books, Saxon math and stuff like that. But if you think you're going to get this fixed by electing somebody or removing Newsom from the governor or somebody else from the governorship, you're not. You're only going to fix this if you take back your responsibilities. And that's what the early church did, and they continued to do that for hundreds of years. The Roman government kept becoming more and more corrupt. Nero himself, you know, if you go back and listen to our shows on Nero, Nero absconded with more than half the treasury of Rome. And he went to Jerusalem to pick up somebody with him to go away with this treasure. He personally knew Paul. I don't know if we'll have time to get in. We'll save that for when we do Acts. But he had, according to many writings, or some writings, he evidently had personal conversations with Paul the Apostle. Nero did. They were explicitly interconnected by a number of ways. I know that Nero had conversations with Paul's half-brother. That there's no question to that. And with his nephew. We know that Claudius Caesar had personal conversations and greatly admired Claudia, who's mentioned in the Bible, whose brother is Linus, who was one of the bishops in Rome. What were they doing? 99% of the people who study Christianity have no clue what they were doing. And there's a silent conspiracy to keep them from knowing what they were doing, because then you could create the FEMA that will come to your rescue. But you would also realize that the preacher who was crying because I guess his church burned up, he was a daughter of the harlot church that have led you back into bondage, have darkened your eyes, and kept you from the solution and salvation of Christ. You think you have it, but we're going to cover that tomorrow in greater detail. I won't go into all that here. But we do have a page called FEMA at Preparing You. So I should at least mention that. I'm sure I could add all kinds of stuff to it. I haven't added a lot to it in a long time. But FEMA, from our point of view, should be the Faith Emergency Ministry Auxiliary. If you came together in the tens and ranks upon tens and ranks upon tens, which we also call the tens, hundreds, and thousands, a network of people that are learning what it means to care about one another as much as they care about themselves. If you were doing that, your FEMA would already be created, because every single congregation would be a part of it. Every single elder in your congregations, which is the head of every family and all their grown sons. My grandsons are a part of the rural fire department, and they've taken the...
Forgive me for interrupting, but okay. Christianity, do you think it's Christianity that done that?
False Christianity.
The way of life, it could have been the way of life, you know, the guidance.
Well, I'm not sure, you're not voicing your question where I can quite understand what are you questioning. You think the church isn't responsible for the ignorance of the people today?
Well, you're saying that the church is responsible for morality. When I think, like, it didn't really matter about churches or states or anything. It's about community.
Well, the community comes together. See, the original church... No. If this guy's going to start shouting, just mute him. Are you going to behave yourself, or are you going to start shouting? I can interrupt you.
I'm talking now.
Yeah. Have about a minute or two, Macadam, just to express your position, and then Gregory can answer.
Yeah. So let's start from scratch. So I think it's not so much religious communities; it's about community, real community. It's about people coming together, real families, real people, real institutions. It's not about religion. You can stick your Christ up, right? We don't look. People are over your Jewish cult. These days, if you're a beautiful person, it'll come through. And did anything change? No, of course it didn't. You can just be yourself. Right? Don't make your shit books.
Okay, right? What? I don't want to hear this guy anymore. Go ahead and mute him. And I will answer your question, though, if you stick around long enough to hear it. You don't know what we're talking about when we say church. You don't know what we're talking about when we say Christianity. Because your view of it is dependent upon false Christianity. The early church, the early Christian community, was people coming together. They weren't just coming together in some little local community where 10 people got together and had a little farm and they helped each other out. They were an international community of people that put community first, morality first. Their neighbor, they cared about their neighbor as much as they cared about themselves. They risked their lives daily.
As long as they don't have a church, shut the fuck up.
No, it wasn't that way at all. That wasn't that way at all. See, he has a very narrow view of history. And he's a part of the problem because he doesn't want to learn. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. I've just had to mute Macadon just briefly because, Macadon, this is a bit of a family space. I have heard you out there. You're a very open-minded person. You have strong views and, you know, a sailor's mouth.
look.
I understand. Just watch your language. Okay. Just watch your language just a little bit. You're welcome to have one of you, but just watch your language a bit.
But he is talking from ignorance.
Those young people, you know, in the environment. You know what I mean? Like I didn't realize, bro. And now I watch my tongue. I didn't realize that there were minors, you know, young people in the space, okay? So you should, yeah, thanks.
Anyway, the reality is I can cut out all of his stuff on my recording, but the reality, he doesn't understand what the early church was doing. He's full of anger for what he sees as church today. And what, you know, like you have to donate. See, you talk about interrupting. You talk about interrupting.
You want to talk about, listen.
Yeah, no, you're interrupting again. You're interrupting again.
So, yes, I feel a little bit upset about what the church did and how they did it and how they got corrupted. And it gave me a bad feeling, all right? The churches, whether you're Orthodox, whether you're Catholic, whether you're a Muslim, whether you're Jewish, it has a bad taste. All of it. It's just rubbish.
Well,
I'm sick of it. All it causes is death.
Why don't you just...
All it causes just, is destruction.
Let's see. Can I mute him?
And division.
One sec, Greg. One sec. Macadon, you'd be surprised that at the end of the day, we're calling out the church. What you see is the church, you know, the Roman Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, modern Christianity. We're actually calling that out for what it is. And for the most part, it's just idolatry and deception. But we're talking about history, and there was a God called Jesus Christ, okay, and he went against
the Orthodox,
the Jews of the, he went against the Jews of the day and the traditions and everything like that, and he, you know, he formed a free society. That's what he did, okay, and that's what we're talking about. The churches today, they're not really talking about that type of thing. So, yeah, before you come out attacking, I understand you've been basically. You know, you're upset with the modern religion, which we are too, okay? Before you attack us...
There is no point, as a human being, with evolution, the way we've become. Look, I was the most religious person on Earth, okay? I made contact with God, okay? And, look, there is no need for these institutions, in all honesty. And I mean it, like from a personal point of view. These churches are all corrupted. God can only touch you, it comes through the heart. If your heart's warm enough and if you're, you know, like geared that way, God will touch you. He will. But not this way. These guys are all just rip-offs. I don't want to subscribe to any religion. My religion is between me and God.
Well, okay, for one thing, he doesn't understand the definition of the word religion as it was at most of the time in history, at least 200 years ago, even in America. The religion was how you took care of the needy of society. In the Bible, that's what... It only mentions religion four times in the Bible. See, there you go. You're interrupting again.
You can't even look... All right. Sorry, guys. I've just had to mute the space. We'll just go one at a time. Macadon, we gave you a little bit to talk there, and Gregory was talking. Macadon, if you could just understand where we're coming from, we know that God is between us and God. But the people that do believe in God and that God does speak to them, they do need to come together and they do need to organise in order to look after each other and each other's families and, you know, the needs that they see around them. That's really what it is. But when people want to lord over others and, like, you know, the Pope does and, you know, the fathers in the Orthodox Church, when it comes to that, that's when the corruption comes in. That's not the right... That's not really the church. The church is the people that come together in the way that Jesus said. And he said that we're not supposed to exercise authority one over the other. He said we're not supposed to call any man father, okay, like the Pope or, you know, these Orthodox priests or anything. We're not supposed to do that. But we're just a group of people here where we've got personal relationships with God, like you're talking about, and we're just trying to organise to look after each other so we don't have to go to the state when things hit the fan, because the state might not be there. And most of all, it's wrong to go to the state, because it's not right to force your neighbour to contribute to your welfare. That's socialism, that's communism. But look, why don't we just let... what we'll do, we'll just take a short break, a long mute, and Isabel has been very patient, and we have Tiffany also that's come up as speaker. We'll give the girls a bit of a chance. I see Rafi's got his hand up, then we'll go to Rafi, and then we'll see where the conversation goes. But, yeah, we're all on the same page. We want the same things. And, we just need to be patient with one another and forgiving. So we'll go to Isabel, and then we'll go to Tiffany, and then Rafi. Go ahead there, Isabel. Loud and clear.
Okay. This is going back now to the beginning of the conversation, but, you know, I am new to California, and just learning about the policies here, which have to do with protecting the environment and being a diverse society, which seem to be the top important policies here, and that hurts a lot of people. And when I talk to people that have been here their whole life, they're very proud of that, but they don't really understand, like, what it all means and the details of those policies, which is why there is no water in the fire hydrants, and you know, there's these tremendous fires. But it is a beautiful thing to see how a lot of the people in those fire areas have gotten together to help each other out. I've been seeing a lot of that. People opening their homes and taking people, strangers in, and taking animals in. That is also happening. So at the same time, there's two things sort of going on. The people not being, you know, not understanding their own, the government that they've created, but they eventually are.
So basically, the people are getting grounded. They're realizing, like, wow, in a catastrophe, some good comes out of a catastrophe. Like, people are really, you know, they're getting back together. So, yeah, so.
I mean, catastrophes do that, but, you know, like, it would be good if we could avoid these catastrophes and have people come together just because they love each other before the catastrophes.
Could have been avoided.
And a good example of something that I experienced just the other day is I'm a teacher in Job Corps, and Job Corps is for basically homeless teenagers throughout California, and there's about 300 teenagers there, and they had the crime prevention department come in to talk to the kids about crime prevention. And, you know, these kids are like just on that edge of being a criminal or coming to Job Corps, basically. And the whole discussion of crime prevention had to do with using the correct pronouns, because it is a crime to use incorrect pronouns. And also,
Please get the out of that place, please. All right. Don't worry. Are you an artist, Isabel?
No, I'm not an artist. I'm a teacher.
Yeah, you need to get the out of there. Tell you.
Okay. Anyway, I just want to say that's an example of where, you know, the policies are just in the wrong direction. Here they have an audience, about 300 young people, and this is what they're talking about in terms of crime prevention.
Guys, look at what is the representative? What are you calling?
What's your language?
Anyway, I'm done. Thank you, Mark.
I love you.
Okay, Isabella, we've just lost Tiffany. She's dropped down. I think Rafi had his hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, the reason of the topic is for us to see the laziness and the hypocrisy and the blindness of mankind, including the so-called churches. That's the reason of this space today. And for somebody to come in who doesn't believe in God and preaching us that the church is not doing their job, brother, trust me, we know. No, you're not teaching us anything here. It is to your advantage to listen and speak less. I say this with love and compassion for you. And we are, as much as you as a non-believer have so much complaint against the church, I used to be an atheist. I know where you're coming from. As a believer in Christ, I dislike the church even more now, what people call the church. So you're preaching to the choir. We are here to say that they misrepresent Christ. They misrepresent the Bible. Their punishment of their hypocrisy is greater than atheists, because they are doing their evil ways in the name of Jesus Christ. As a believer now, I dislike the church even more than as an atheist for 46 years. What we are saying is that a true religious person, if you are religious, what that means actually, please have ears to hear, it means that you love neighbor as much as you love yourself. That means you are not selfish. So before people say that I'm not religious, please understand what religion means. It is not what you think it means. It is not what people told you it means. It's not. We need to gain understanding before we speak. Before we speak anything, we need to gain understanding. And in order to do that, we need humility. We need ears to hear.
Yeah, but there's no time these days. See, people interrupted you. I just interrupted you. Just imagine an echo chamber of people.
Well, you're the only one interrupting, brother. You're the only one.
But you got your 15 minutes of fame. Get the out of here, you idiot. Listen, the world is in distress. We don't need because like you.
Mark, he's doing it again.
Yeah,
he can't control himself. He's so full of anger and hate. I would not want to be in a foxhole with him. I'm sorry.
He could be full of a bit of something else too.
Oh, well, that's possible.
I mean a couple of beers maybe or something, you know.
It would take a lot of beer for me to get that way.
We'll move on.
Go ahead, Greg.
The fact is I guess we've lost him. But he is out of control with his anger. And maybe there's other things influencing him right now. I get it. That's always a possibility. You know, like he's talking to Rafi. You're 15 minutes of fame because Rafi speaks. This is our space that we created. Rafi's part of that. And he was trying to encourage the guy to think about what we're saying. We've already defined religion according to what the definition was written down, what it says in the Bible. Religion is how you take care of the needy. And Christ said you do it through community. You do it through free will offerings, not forced offerings. All these Christians are taking care of the needy through forced offerings. They can't be Christians. They're giving true Christianity, true Christ, a bad name. And, you know, we make it clear. I thought I was being pretty clear. But just the sound of the word religion upsets some people because they're angry. But Jesus says, and I won't just quote Jesus, I'll quote somebody else. Jesus says you're supposed to forgive your enemy, even love your enemy. It doesn't mean that you kowtow to him. It doesn't mean that you interrupt him, that you enter into some kind of argument and start swearing and cussing at him. That's the darkness speaking. You know what? And I said I'll quote somebody else. You know, I've been quoting people all evening. I didn't always put the name by them. You know, a hate draws you into the dark side. And you know, I have to advise people that hating Newsom, hating Obama, hating the Pope, hating the Palestinians or hating the Jews. You can point out what people are doing wrong, but I find it very unproductive to point out to one group what their enemy is doing wrong. They probably already know what their enemy is doing wrong. If they want to get better, you have to point out to them what they are doing wrong. And you only do that, hopefully, if you're motivated out of true love, true community, that community of voluntarism. What you're only going to point that out because you actually care about them. Yeah, I thought it was interesting, and many of you maybe know Isabel and why Isabel is in California. She isn't in there just to teach these other people. She's doing that because she's keeping busy, but she's really there taking care of her mother. And I would never tell her, you better get out of there, Isabel, because I know I've taken the time to find out what she's really doing. I'm not the kind of person that would tell people what to do anyway. I'm talking about in principle. I will tell you that hate will cloud your ability to see and identify the real problem. Anger, uncontrolled anger, it will drive you to drink. It will drive you to take drugs. And, you know, one of the greatest drugs there is false religion. And we'll, like I said, again, we'll talk about this in a lot more detail tomorrow when we talk about the politics of Christ and the polity. We're going to be covering number 9, so I don't want to repeat myself too much. But the fact is that Christ was preaching a voluntary system of self-government where the power was in the hands of every family, because every man was returned to his family and every man to his possessions. Yet they had community, not in on just a local basis, but we see right in Acts they had where they could send help to North Carolina or they could send help to California. If people think this fire is such a disaster, and it certainly is, it's nothing like what they're going to face in California. That they won't be able to even stay in California, the dying and the deaths. And there's large places in Oregon, the same, Washington, the same. All over the world, that's going to happen eventually. Right now, we have some time to start actually thinking about what actually worked in history. But if you don't know history, you won't know what worked in history. We can still explain it to you. We can teach you a little bit about history. We do that on all of our pages. We bring the Bible into context, the early Christians into context. We show you where they went wrong, the same as I was saying earlier, where America went wrong. They got away from voluntary fire departments. The fire department is now supported by tax dollars. And what happens is they hire DEI experts and they shut off the water. And your agricultural department destroys farms. And your medical insurance, your federal medical insurance, your government health care thing has made Americans the most unhealthy people in the world. Your commerce department is destroying commerce. Your presidents and your congressmen are eating you alive. They're going about devouring who they will. I may do it in the afternoon show tomorrow, play a quote. It's actually, I've already shared it on my X, those who follow me on X, where a lady in North Carolina says, we haven't even seen FEMA here. They've done all the roads. It's all cleared by us. And they've done a great job. And yeah, like Isabel was saying, down there in the fire, I just gave you this story where the movie star went and saved a guy's father who was in his room. The fire department didn't, they're big houses sometimes, and they didn't get into every single room. They probably called out, but maybe the guy's hard of hearing. But he would have burned up. But the neighbor knew to call this movie star, Woods, whatever his full name is. Somebody probably knows it. But he called him, and he answered the call. He himself
James
went.
James Woods.
What is it? James Woods, isn't it? Yeah. Right, thank you. But he answered the call himself. He went into the house himself. The fire all around. And he went in this and got him out. Saved that guy's father's life. That's neighbor helping neighbor. But how many people burned to death because nobody did that? Or nobody knew who to call? Or people were more interested in saving, their cat than saving their neighbor? I bet you we can find as many stories as that, but I don't want to depress people with those stories. But the fact is that Christians were ready for a disaster because the Christians had already walked away from the social welfare system of Herod, of Caesar, of the chancellor of Corinth, who Paul had the conversation with, saying that you guys should be taking care of the needy of Corinth through free will offerings. This is what that's what religion was. You were either doing it through free will offerings or you're doing it through public offerings. And they would help out people who weren't a part of their network. But if you were going to be a part of their network, one of the key things that made you peculiar is that you were forgiving and caring. And that was what you ate, drank, and slept and did. You were persevering, looking for righteousness, not self-righteousness, cussing out other people, condemning, the temples in Rome. That you don't see that in Acts. Instead, they say, we have a table of which they can't eat. we don't want to eat of their table because that's a covetous practice. And it's what Paul calls idolatry. And their table is a snare and a trap. All the things that we say, which the fellow who was fond of arguing and interrupting doesn't know what we're talking about. He's ignorant of it. And I don't blame him for his ignorance because the modern church doesn't teach him. But I don't know who in the modern church doesn't teach that because they were never taught that. Because they didn't learn that in the seminary. I know they didn't teach me in the seminary. I don't know. And I give everybody a benefit of the doubt. That's why I don't tell people, leave L.A. I tell you that it's going to get worse in L.A. someday. But if you're going to leave L.A., you leave according to the leading of the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit doesn't make you angry. The Holy Spirit doesn't make you mean. The Holy Spirit doesn't make you an alcoholic or a drug addict. The world does. The hatred of the world does. You know, one of my favorite movies, and we won't go on with this forever. I see the time is clicking away, is a movie. Herman Melville wrote the book, and the book is good too. But it's Billy Budd. And the evil guy in that was Claggett. He was mean to everybody. He was angry with everybody. And he drank, too. But he kowtowed to the officers, but he was the guy in between the officers and the men. But he hated Billy Budd. And he wanted to destroy him because Billy Budd was actually good. He was actually kind and forgiving. People teased him, and he took it. It was okay. He did his work. He was industrious. He was one of the best seamen, and everybody respected that in him. Because he did, if there was a fire, he'd put it out. If there was something dangerous to do that would save somebody, he would do it. And that's what the church should be doing. That's what, you know, my whole life has been, trying to help other people out with no, you know, I don't tell everybody what I do all the time, but only as an example of my own experience. But the reality is that evil wanted to do one thing. Wanted to make Billy Budd angry. He couldn't make him be bad. He couldn't make him be a bad seaman. He couldn't make him hate other men. He tried to turn him all kinds of different ways. But he finally made him angry. Anger will destroy you. I don't care how nice you think you are, how much virtue you think you have, because you point out how wicked the church is, how wicked the government is, how wicked the Jews are, how wicked the Palestinians are, how wicked the, you know, whatever. I don't know. There's probably a long list of people that are wicked. What you need to do, and the one thing you can do something about, is you. That the kingdom of God operates on sacrifice. If you aren't laying down your life, your pride, your vanity, your time, your energy to actually try to help other people out, you're a part of the problem. And it doesn't matter how much bad thing you see the rest of the world doing. That doesn't get you any closer. This is why I was saying that, yeah, there may be conspiracies, there may be money-grabbing property people, there may be people trying to, you know, I known for years there is a concerted effort to weaken the American people, to destroy America. And the American people are very much a part of it. But I'm also very aware that there are people out there starting to take back their responsibility. And one thing I know, the difference between a scattered flock and a flock that comes together. That's what we're not doing. And that anger will divide us and divide us and divide us. Don't give in to the anger. Don't give in. Yeah, occasionally we have to look at what the other guy is doing. But and it may be bad. But we only want to do that so that we're not a part of that. We're not a part of their evil. But if we are not going to defeat evil with more evil, with more anger, with more... I mean, everybody gets tough when they're young and they're strong and everything, but eventually we get old. Real toughness, it doesn't come that way. So anyway, I know I'm kind of rambling here. I don't know if anybody else is raising their hands. Go ahead.
Yeah, Gary, I think I'll probably complete your thought. You know, just earlier on, there's a very old Facebook friend of mine that I worked with in my atheist years, a long time ago, 10, 12 years ago. And he just posted something saying that we should not blame the firefighters for the lack of water, but we should blame the water department and the people in government. And this gentleman, his name is Michael. I love him to death. I mean, he's so intense and so dedicated in his mission of trying to create a better world without God. Just by removing money and everything will go well. That's his mentality. That was my mentality before. And I've been explaining this to him for almost 8 years now, ever since I came to Christ, that it's not the fault of money. It's not the fault of government. It's our fault. We have to get responsible. We have to start loving neighbor as ourselves. And as I'm gaining understanding, I'm sending him more detailed information and an article to read. And he refuses to see his part, our part, individuals' parts, responsibilities, how we are contributing to the mess. So he wants to shift the blame from firefighters to water department, and never really shifting to ourselves. We are to blame individually. We are to blame. First of all, who elected these government people? The people. The people did. The people who are blaming them. How about blaming ourselves? We trusted them. We had the bad judgment on people. Don't we have part of responsibility? And if we go deeper than that, why do we take part of a system that we give power to men to do such things? To be so irresponsible, either on purpose or just by lack of competence. Either way, why do we see the system as the best system out there? We don't even ask questions. And the reason why in our spaces we're not 50, 100 people, because me and Mark have been going to spaces for the last 5 months, and we speak this message. It sounds good to some people at first, until they understand what we are saying is that you take responsibility, you are to blame, you have to repent, and you have to change your ways. And people don't like that. They don't like that. And they start blaspheming us, disowning us. And that's why nobody's here. We are a small group. Most of us are in the network. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that if we don't look in the mirror and say, what am I doing into contributing in the mess, and what am I not doing in contributing to the solution, until we don't take this route, and we don't, which is the route of repentance, nothing's going to change. This message is not popular. It wasn't popular in the time of Jesus. It hasn't changed today. But I guess the only thing to do for us who are on this way of seeking the kingdom is to not be discouraged. Yes, Gregory, not to get angry. It's very easy to go in that route sometimes, to be impatient and anger installs. But just keep on pushing forward, not doubting the message of Christ, which we have found by the grace of God. Not being discouraged, just going forward, because we don't have a second option. Any other option beside this option, it's not God's option. Even if it might sound good, it is not. It is not. We have only one option. There's only one way. The way is narrow. So we keep forward. We keep on going forward. We keep on preaching the full gospel of the kingdom of God included in the gospel. And that's all we can do. And the rest, I mean, it's not up to us. And whatever happens, wherever we go in the end of our lives, that's where we're at. It's, we have no control over that. But we do have some control over what we are doing, the way we are seeking the truth in His kingdom. And it's a shame that that guy was so vulgar. Maybe he was strong, I don't know. I would have loved to for him to stay and renew his mind, because every time I hear an atheist talk like that, that was me. I was angry towards all religions, and I did not have much ears to hear either, because I had strong convictions that any religion, anything, just the word of Jesus, just the word of Bible, put me into reaction. But I wasn't as vulgar as him. I had ears a little bit more hearing ears than him, but it's okay. I guess this is part of the process of going forward, and we're gonna meet all sorts of peoples. And but we let's stay strong in our own convictions. Let's not doubt our convictions. And if there's any refining to do, God will do them along the way.
I did have to drop him, because I know for a fact there are children listening on this call.
Let me say, if that guy is talking to me straight in front of my face and wants to cuss and swear, I can take it. You know, I don't mind that, but this is a public space. We do make a recording. We could have all kinds of people here, and if we don't speak out against that kind of venom and anger and moderate it, we become guilty by association. I think the cussing and swearing does him more harm, and if he is drinking too, that's doing him more harm. But the anger is probably the most harmful thing, and it's interesting that that's what I kind of started out with. You know, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff going on in California, and there's people that are just licking their chops on the money that they're going to make. There's insurance companies bailing out on people, but I'll lay you odds, the guys that are really in control, I've seen this. I've seen it from behind the scenes. They got themselves covered. I mean, it was like, you know, when the Twin Towers went down, the guy who had just bought it double indemnified. He evidently knew that he was going to need that money. And somehow or other, the insurance companies, they know what went on, but they shut their mouth because they made some other backroom deal. I worked in one of the most powerful insurance companies in the United States, equivalent to the Lloyd's of London of America. And I was security there. I could walk by their secure vault, and I could, if I brought my binoculars, I could read their teletype coming off all night long. And they were doing nothing but making deals behind the scenes with the governor and with other people in Congress. You mentioned, somebody mentioned Feinstein, who I think she's been replaced now, but her husband was, yeah, she was pretty much dead when she was still in the office. But I've seen her career for a long time. But her husband was on the board at Stanford University, shutting down all people like Ioannidis and stuff who were trying to speak out against the ridiculous stuff they were doing with COVID. People have no idea of how evil the conspiracy is against humanity right now. And what we're seeing take place in California, tragic. I love to be doing a lot more than we're probably doing, and God will give us the power to do it. But it's going to take, and we'll talk about this as we get into Acts, to find out what the church was really doing. And I think if that guy actually understood what the church was really doing, it would help him. It would clear up, but he's not going to get it till he lets go of his anger and judgment of other people. And he still wants to rule over other people. I mean, it seems innocent, but he's telling Isabel where she should go and leave with no knowledge of her whatsoever. And I'm sure he would like to tell me where to go, too. But that I only point this out, he's not listening now anyway, is so that anybody who's tempted to anger, it's going to cloud your ability to hear the Holy Spirit. Because you can't be, if you're angry, that's a sign of vanity. I have faced some really evil people, mobs of people, that if you want the protection of the Holy Spirit, you can't run out ahead of the Lord. And that's what people are doing with their anger. So, yeah, my best advice for the FEMA of tomorrow is to be the FEMA of today for the little things and start creating those relations. Look out amongst yourself, find people you trust. The only way to do that is to gather together and help them with the little things. Help them take care of their mother or their father, like James Wood did. Ran into a building that was about to burn and saved the guy's father. I've known James Wood and of him and people who know him for a long time. There's a really good man in there. But I tell you what's stopping him from seeing the kingdom is that he's so angry at the system. He's already talking about tribunals and getting revenge against the corrupt government, which I get it, but it's not the answer. The end is not to resist the evil, but to seek the righteousness of God and not my own self-righteousness. Well, so with that, I'll shut up and turn it back to you.
I think that's pretty much, wraps it up. It's a temptation to get drawn into the anger.
Yeah.
And that's what evil wants, doesn't it? Evil wants you to come and participate. We need to be in the spirit and not in our emotions. Emotions are appropriate sometimes, but yeah, when it comes to things like this, we need to be in the spirit and not get drawn into things like this. But before we do go, I know Isabel's here and MB's here. And of course, Rafi also. Just wanted to give them a final say before we wrap it up, then we can close it out. So, Isabel, did you want to go first?
Yeah, I want to say I actually understand that guy. He reminds me a lot of when I worked in the prison. And, the prisoners, they would see me, white, older woman, and make a lot of assumptions about me, and they were very, very angry. And it took a long time for them to get to know me, and they all changed their attitude. And it was mind-blowing to them that they could experience a white, older woman in a positive way. But it takes a while. But the first reaction was anger. And I think as soon as he heard Gregory using words that he had heard before, he just made certain assumptions about him. And, without knowing or understanding, just assume things. Because the words were the same that he had heard his whole life, that he hated him. And, it would have been good if he could have stayed around, but...
Look, I wanted him to stay. I've heard him around on exit. He's even defended me in a space or two. I think with that guy, his name's Macadon, he's just a little bit limited in his vocabulary, whereas the expletives have to cover certain words that don't come to mind sometimes. And, of course... if he's a tradesman or a sailor, of course, he's probably used to swearing a lot. So he comes on, and in other spaces, people swear quite a bit sometimes. So he's probably just used to that. He's probably a more simple type fellow. And he, like I said to him, I said, we'd probably agree on most things, but he just couldn't control himself in this particular space. We've got John here. He's got a couple of young boys, usually by his side, and under five, and so yeah, he just had to he did agree and he was sorry, and then all of a sudden it was just on again with it.
It becomes uncontrollable, and like I say, in person, That's the thing, is that these phone calls and these X spaces, they're a particular kind of form, and you have to create and treat them differently than you would if I was right in front of the guy. Because, you know, I've been in those places, you know, like Isabel's worked in jails, and I haven't worked in jails. I have visited people in jails, but I've certainly been in ghettos and violent places and stuff like that. One-on-one, real humans, even 1-on-10, I can tolerate that, and I can appease this situation. But in a forum like this, we have to, because it's a recording, it's not his show, it's our show, we have to put some kind of restrictions on it. And I thought you were very patient with him, Mark, but, you know, the very thing that he accused us of doing, interrupting him, he just was constantly interrupting. Yeah, he would ask a question and then interrupt my answer.
Yeah, look, I don't think he's a silly fellow, but some of us are just, more in control of our emotions than others. And he is a wild top guy. He's a wild man.
Yeah.
So he just can't control his emotions sometimes, which, you know, it can be probably good in some parts of life if you're in a war or you're a soldier or something, or I'm not sure, but
yeah,
maybe if you're playing.
Personally, I'm not even sure that it's a good thing there.
It's not.
Yeah, because to be out of control is a very dangerous place to be.
It's a passion, which is not necessarily always positive. So, anyway, enough about Macadam.
Yeah.
We'll wrap it up soon. MB, did you want to just add anything before we wrap it up?
No, not really. It was just a little bit of a spicier space tonight. But, I don't want to belabor all of this, but, and I don't know anything about that man, but, you know, that anger that he has, I don't know is necessarily really that uncommon when you're trying to talk about this, what we're talking about, to other people who so he was, you know, very vocal about it, but I think it's very, that kind of reaction. I mean, I live with somebody who would kind of have this, you know, the person I live with wouldn't agree with him, with that man, but his level of reactions to what we're talking about would be about the same. So something about what we're doing just seems to really cause anger sometimes.
It brings it out.
I don't think
we actually cause the anger, but it bubbles up, and I get it. I understand it. I'll tell you real quick. When I first started down this road after my experience watching sheep on the desert and suddenly being awakened to what, at least a large portion of what we were not seeing as a people or seeking Christians or whatever, I didn't even want to use the word church because it associated with all the people that I had known in church that had lied to me and deceived me and tried to control me and manipulate me. Although I can't really pick on them because they were just lied to and controlled by somebody else before. But the point was, is I realized one day out by the horse corral, round corral, that my anger is what was keeping me from using the word. I was defeated already. I wanted to use the word ecclesia instead of church, because that anger still lingered. It wasn't a lot. It wasn't like him or what it sounded like he was, because I don't really... Anger is the absence of good. It's not a real power or anything. It's an illusion. But when I gave up that anger, everything started to fit better. Even the horse started to do what I wanted it to do. But you cannot approach this with anger, and I think that if people want to have a 10 minutes of anger on these spaces, I don't think we should tolerate it. I think Mark did it excellent job of trying to deal with it. But we need to nip it in the bud. If they have to go do a breather and come back when they can control themselves. Because we don't want to give a form to that spirit. There's enough of it around. But anyway, thanks everybody for your comment. MBN, where are you from? Do I know you? I know the name MBN, but do I actually know you as a person?
I don't know that we know each other as a person. I'm in Texas.
But okay.
I've spoken.
Yeah, okay. I think I know who you are. Okay. Yeah, I know we haven't met face to face. But
no.
Yeah, I wasn't tying the name to, but I won't mention your real name, but I know who you are. I thought that was you. Okay. Bless you.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be incognito or anything. That's just what I signed up for.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
I don't have that name there.
I like to identify everybody that are talking to. And I probably will normally forget their names anyway. But yeah, thanks for your comments.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, we'll go to Rafi and then we'll wrap it up. Do you want to give us some final thoughts, Rafi?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week, definitely in a negative way. We hear Trump's rhetoric of Canada, Greenland, Gulf of Mexico, and the Panama Canal. He basically wants to expand America. It's really interesting. This came out of nowhere for me anyways. And it looks like it's going to be a very spicy 4 years and a very spicy year as well. And hopefully God will use these future events for his kingdom. Those who are sitting on the fence will make them think, jump on the side of the kingdom of God. And so let's use these opportunities that are ahead to continue preaching the gospel and shedding light on the truth, and hopefully God will use us as well. That's the biggest blessing, that he will use us to show his way. And let's persevere, let's help each other, encourage each other, and connect with each other. And it's important to, you know, relationship, trusting each other, getting to know each other, going through difficult times as well, which reinforces relationships. If we come out together on the other side of the tunnel, there's going to be plenty of that as well. And hopefully we will persevere in his ways. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rafi. So anyone who's comes to our call, we'll see you in about an hour. And thanks, everybody, for coming, the listeners also down there. And we'll see you the same time next week. Have a good week, and God bless.
Join us at preparingyou.com or hisholychurch.org, or you can follow us on X at His Holy Church, or also at Gregory, capital HHC. But join the network at Preparing You in the area where you live, whether you're in Australia or Texas or New York or Canada. Join there and start making contact with other people. Start sharing this information with other people so that those who are seeking the kingdom can seek it together. Until then, bless you.